Ask the old people, what does that mean? Let me tell you where I got it from. That title came from a book that Brother Bill gave to me. Okay. The book that he gave to me was by a man named Andy Andrews called The Heart Mender. Do you remember that, Brother Bill? All right. Well, this past week, I had a case of books come in that Brother Keith had given to me for my birthday. And I'll be honest with you, I was geeked about it. It is a complete set of commentaries by a man named John G. Butler. And all I'm thinking is, I've got to have space in my shelf for these books. And so I began going through some of the books, and the ones that I call fluff, I threw them over in a box and end up taking them and throw them in a dumpster. A fluff book is a book that you'll read one time and never look at it again. But there are some books that aren't just books, they're tools. Just like a carpenter would have a hammer, just like a carpenter would have a square, a saw, a preacher has books that are his tools. So I began going through this, and as I came across some of these books, I came across the one that Brother Bill had given to me on the Heart Mender. And I thought, everybody needs a heart mended, so I'm going to read it. And this is the way that the book began. He said that he had a dead myrtle tree in his yard. He lived down on the coast, somewhere around Pensacola, Gulf Shores, down in that area. And he said, I have never been one for chainsaws. And I'm thinking, well, me and him don't get along because I love chainsaws. I'm not into swinging an axe. If I got a sharp chain, let's get her done, all right? But he said, I just have always been an axe man. So he began to chop. Then it was as though, you know, it's like, well, it's down, but the root needs to come up. And I like that. If you leave a root in the ground, it's just going to cause nothing but trouble. So he started digging. He said, finally, he said, I had a hole around that myrtle tree big enough that my dad's Buick could have gone in it. And he said, and I got down, and all of a sudden, my shovel hit something, and it sounded different. And if any of you men have ever dug, you know that when you hit something in the ground, it could be a rock, hopefully not a wire, but you know there's a different sound to it. And so he said, I started digging, and it wasn't long before I pulled up a metal box. He said it was about the size of like a number 10 can, like at a restaurant. And he said, I'm thinking, what is that doing buried in my yard underneath a myrtle tree? And he said, so I brushed it off, and he said, I opened it up. It was rusted, he said, but I was able to open it up. And on the inside, there were buttons, and there were some photographs. And he thought, well, I wonder what this is. And so he began to look, and he didn't recognize the writing on the buttons. Later on, as he did research, he found out that they were German. Then he began to look at the pictures. One picture was a guy that he did not know that was from about his waist up, and he was in a German uniform. And then there was a picture of a man, his wife, and child. And no one was smiling in the picture. Later on, his wife would tell him, she said, I think I know what's going on in this picture. The man is trying to be stoic because he's going to war. The wife is understanding that she may never see her husband again, and they've got a little girl that's right there with them. But he said there was a third picture. And in this third picture, he said there was four men that you could make out easily. And he said, the question that I had is this, why is there a metal box in my yard under a myrtle tree, and one of the pictures has a picture of Adolf Hitler in it? And he said, I didn't really know what to do. And he said, I began to research. And he said, he began to use the internet, and he began to try to get some translation and that type of thing. And he said, it wasn't long before I realized that the buttons that were in this box were from a U-boat, which is a German submarine. As he began to do more research, he finally understood what was happening, and he said, I began doing research about the Eastern Seaboard and the Gulf of Mexico during World War II. And he said, I've got to get to the bottom of this. Now, I've not finished the book. I don't know how his heart got mended. I'm going to keep reading the book. But he said, as I was doing that research, in the Gulf of Mexico, there was, I think there was 397 ships that were sunk between 1942 and 1943. He talked about over on the Eastern Seaboard how many people had died. And I don't know, Karen, how far are your people from Cape Hatteras? 100 miles? Cape Hatteras, over on the coastline up in North Carolina, was known as Torpedo Junction in 1942. Torpedo Junction. And he said, the research showed me that there were 1,300 Navy men, sailors, that were killed. There were 201 Coast Guard men that were killed. And there were over 5,000 merchant marines that were killed when these torpedoes would hit these boats and would sink them either in the Gulf or in the Atlantic. I was always interested in the merchant marines because when I was a little boy at Jenkins Boys Club, where I learned to play basketball, one of the guys that used to play for Adolph Rupp when he was at Kentucky, he was the guy that was the president of the Jenkins Boys Club. His name was Cy Wright. Well, at that boys club, there was a friend of mine named Sean Curry. His dad was a merchant marine, and his dad had been killed. So I was always interested in that. And so he said, I began pondering this, and he said, it consumed me. And he said, finally, I said to my wife, I've got to get to the bottom of this, but I don't know how. And she said, ask the old people. And as I was thinking about my message for this week, I thought, there's my title right there. That's my title, Ask the Old People. We are coming up on the 250th anniversary of America. We have outlived most republics. And by the way, we're not a democracy, we're a republic. That's the way we were founded. I'd like for us to stay that way. Instead of mob rule, we're ruled by law. And so, we're coming up on that birthday. But I see things, and maybe I see too many things. Every day, I read 3 or 4 aggregate sites. I find out what's going on in Israel. I find out what's going on in Europe. I find out what's going on in America and in many of our large cities. I don't really know if we're going to make it as a nation the way that we were founded. I just don't know if we're going to make it. Just this past Tuesday, there were 3 socialists / communists that were elected to congressional seats in New York State. Most of them were right around New York City where you know, lunacy reigns. But, you know, but still, they out-lunaticked the ones that were in the seat. I think that's a pretty accurate thing, because the three that they beat out, they're crazy in themselves. And so I don't know if we're going to make it, but I know this. If we are, there's a group of people that we're going to have to pay attention to. I call them the founders. We've got to look back and we've got to see what the older people did and how they did it. I want you to look with me at our first point. First thing that I want you to see is I want you to see there are presumptions that are being made today. Now let's read our text. Proverbs 16:31, it says this, the hoary head. The word hoary means gray or white, all right? So in other words, it's the older people. The hoary head is a crown of glory. But it also has this little word, if it be found in the way of righteousness. So in other words, the white hairs or the gray hairs, that is a crown of glory. I have no glory. I can have a little bit if I don't shave it. But the generic thinking there is that when you're older, if you have followed in the way of righteousness, then you have glory because you're a wise person. And I don't know why I had this thought this week, but I had this thought, well, there was a whole bunch of white hairs in those early years because every one of them wore powdered wigs. I don't have a clue why those guys did that. I just know that I see people with wigs and they just pouring powder on them and they're dressing in their colonial garb to do reenactments. Elmer Towns, who is a dear mentor of mine, Jeff knows him, Deb knows him. Deb was really, she loved Ruth Towns, Dr. Towns' wife before she died. But I know his oldest daughter. She was doing revolutionary reenactments up in Virginia for years and years. He would tell me about it. And so you've got this verse, and it says that the white head, the old head, that it's got glory if it's found in the way. Now, when I use the word presumption, there are people that presume a lot of things. And you presume to your detriment. I've made assumptions a lot of times. I've told the story about how when I first trusted the Lord that I got in an argument with a guy about the wedding vows and how the wedding vows and the ceremony was in the Bible. And he goes, it's not in the Bible. I say, oh yeah, it is. It's in the Bible. It's not in the Bible. I said, what are them preachers reading out of? They reading out of a Bible. And he goes, well, I'm telling you, it's not in there. I read the New Testament, and you know what? He was right. It wasn't in there. But I made that assumption. I presume something. Do you know what we have a problem with today with young people? They presume that they know more than they knew 250 years ago. Well, if I would have been born in 1776, bless God, I'd have stopped slavery. If I would have been born during that time, I could have told them how to organize that First Continental Congress. And one of the things that we have a problem with younger people today, and even, sad to say, some of the older folks, you want to make judgments on people, and you filter your 21st century mindset, and you place that on a person that lived 250 years ago. And we say, well, I would have done this different. Or I would have, you know what you would have done? You would have done exactly what they were doing at the time. And it is arrogant on my part and arrogant on your part to think that we're smarter than everybody that's ever lived before we got here. I referenced New York a moment ago. Same thing's happening in Seattle. Same thing's happening in LA. All right, not lower Alabama, but Los Angeles. You have people and they are saying, well, we don't want to have the rugged individualism of America. We want to have the warmth of the collectivism, which is nice and fuzzy sounding. The problem is, in the history of the world, it's never worked. But yet, what's the thinking? Well, it'll work this time because we're in charge. They think they're smarter than anybody that has ever lived before them. Is this not true in our churches? This church is a rarity as far as the way that we do things, especially music, all right? We're very conservative in our music. I love the way that Brother Keith leads our singing. I love the fact that we sing hymns. But there are churches all across this nation and in the West. And this is what their worship leaders, aka song leaders, say. We don't sing dead men's songs at this place. How stupid is that? How stupid is that? We don't sing dead men's songs. That would be like me saying, I never read or try to listen to dead men or preachers that are dead, their sermons. Some of the greatest sermons that I've ever read have been by dead men. Some of the greatest insights biblically that I have ever garnered in my life have come from guys that lived 200 years ago. But yet there are people and they think that they are so bright, that they got it so much together, that they want to just listen to the siren call of young people. I'll give you a Bible example. Anybody know who followed Solomon when Solomon died? Man's name was Rehoboam. Rehoboam was his son. Rehoboam, he had older guys around him. His father had written him the Proverbs. I mean, whenever you read Solomon and him say, my son, attend unto my words. When he says, my son, you can take that to mean you, but you can also take it to mean his actual son, Rehoboam. Solomon dies. And he goes to the old guys and he says, hey guys, what do you think we ought to do for the people? And the wise old men go, why don't you give them a tax cut? Why don't you let them keep more of their own money? Why don't you let them do that? He goes, Well, if I cut taxes, then I'll have less money to do what I want to do. So he's got some buddies of his. Maybe he went to high school with them. All right? And he says, hey, boys, what do you think we ought to do? Now, these boys, I don't have enough sense to get an out of rain. They have no life experience. They don't have anything except, hey, we're buddies with the king. Hey, we can be his entourage. And they go, don't listen to them old guys and giving them people that money back. Man, you can do this and we'll help you. You know, when you got a pocket full of money, you got all kind of friends. And so you've got this man, Rehoboam, and he says, I think you young guys are right. And so he says, nation, my father beat you with whips. I'm going to beat you with scorpions. I'm going to make it worse. And so he adds to the tax burden. And you know what happened? That nation flew apart. It split. There were two tribes in the south Judah, Benjamin, and the other 10 were up north. And you know what they said? Rehoboam is not our king. Jeroboam's our guy. And there was never a king in that northern kingdom that was a good king. But Rehoboam brought it upon himself. Why? Because he listened to fools instead of the gray hairs. He was presumptuous. Does the Bible not say to keep me from presumptuous sins? What about our nation? We have people, and they come up with some of the most asinine ideas that you can even imagine. They come up with ideologies, and most of them are birthed in Marxism. Most of them are birthed in the ivory towers of academia. And they teach these things as though it is holy writ. And there's not one of them that has ever come to fruition and brought success. And they say, well, you know, that capitalism, that's some bad stuff. The only problem is it's better than all the other stuff. It's given us the greatest standard of living in the history of the world. And yet, what do we have? We have people that come out of our universities and they go, not for us. And I'm thinking, well, go live in Cuba for about 6 months and you'll change your mind. And so there's a lot of presumption. But there's a second thing, and that is perspective. I want you to look at 1932. I think I put that on a slide. Thou shalt rise up before the hoary head. What does that mean? What that means is this. That means that if I'm sitting down and an older person comes to see me or comes into the room, I stand up. How many of you are old enough to remember that a man would stand when a woman entered the room? Now it's not that way. I know about a woman the other day that it happened to me. I mean, it really did. I'm like, I'll hold this door. And the lady goes, you ain't got to hold that door for me. I'll go to that door. And I said, well, if I can remember your face, I won't do it next time. I heard a great story from Dr. Bob III, my first year of Bible college. He was holding a door for a lady. She walked in, had her nose up in the air, had a little dog in her arm. Walked in, didn't even grunt at him. And he goes, you're welcome, lady, and so's your kid. But I remember when there was respect that was given. I've had people say, don't say yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am to me. Yes, I am. Why is that? Because I was taught that way. You respect those that are older than you. Why? Because they got more sense than you. Ask the old people. If you want to know something, ask the old people. I was talking about an uncle of mine. He was in his 90s when I had his funeral down in Macon. And I used to love to just listen to him tell stories. He was in World War II. And he was on a cruiser. And there was a torpedo that hit it. And as they were coming up this ladder, the guy that was in front of him got blown off the ladder. But one of the most chilling stories that he ever told me, he said, the scaredest that I ever was in a typhoon. He said, we were in the Pacific, and he said, the storm was bad. And he said, we had a boy on our boat that had been raised on the Great Lakes. He was only 17 years old. His parents had to sign to let him join the service. And he said, we told the captain about this boy. And they said, go get him. They went and got this young boy and said, son, we understand that you were raised on the Great Lakes with those storms. He said, yes, sir. He said, my dad was a ship captain on the Great Lakes. He said, we're in trouble up here on this bridge. Can you help us? He said, yes, sir. He said, can you give me 3, 4, 5 minutes? He said, well, what do you need that for? He said, well, I'm a religious man. He said, I need to go pray real quick. 5 minutes later, that 17-year-old boy came back to the bridge and he started barking out orders. 10 degrees into the wind. The wind would change directions. What's it doing right now? All right, 5 degrees back to the starboard. And he said for 18 hours, that boy stayed on that bridge. And he began to give these orders. And then finally, the typhoon was about to go. He said, that boy saved our ship. And he said, but he was a religious boy. And when my uncle told me that story, all I'm thinking is, God gave that boy direction. But it was my old uncle that told me about it. And I've been getting mileage out of that story for 15 years. I could put my hands on it if I had to. I could go to Macon and I could con my cousin out of the papers. But I know this. I know that he got the notes from a bridge that day and had them made copies. And until the day he died, he kept those at his house out down in Macon next to Lake Tobosoffke. Why is that? Because he saw God in that. And he was wise enough to see God in that. You see, he was an old man, so that's who we go to. We go to the old men. His homespun wisdom was fantastic. And you and I, we need to understand that people see things differently. Everybody does not see things like me. You ought to thank God for that. You ought to thank God that I'm not the president of the United States. I would be assassinated in about 13 seconds. I tell people I make Rush Limbaugh look like a flaming liberal when it comes to things I believe. But I know this, everybody does not see things like I do. And that's okay. First Continental Congress, 1774. They're wanting to have a word of prayer. Who's going to lead it? Somebody says, well, what about old Jacob Duchesne? Well, I don't know about that. I mean, we're all different religions here. They gave a list of the people that were represented at that First Continental Congress. You had Anglicans. You had Presbyterians, you had Lutherans, you had Quakers, you had Congregationalists, you had Reform Christians, and you had Baptists. You know what all of those have in common? They're all followers of Christ. When somebody says this nation was not really founded upon Christianity, do you understand how stupid that is? Go to the old people. Go to the old people. Read the letters of Washington. And I'm telling you, they didn't always, like I said, see eye to eye. But you know what Samuel Adams said? He said this. He said, I can participate and listen to a man pray that is different. If he is a pious man and a virtuous man and he loves his country. And I'm thinking, I don't have a problem with Peter Marshall being the chaplain of the Senate. As I was putting those books that Brother Keith had given me for a birthday gift, as I was putting those up, I came across 3 or 4 books that I have collected over the years. And it's the works from Catherine Marshall about her husband, Peter Marshall, who was the chaplain of the United States Senate. Man, I'm telling you, some of the greatest things that I have ever told from this pulpit came from Peter Marshall. When I've used the story about spiritual research, how that when the old preacher from Chicago would walk around with 3x5 cards in his pocket and somebody would say, "Preacher, would you pray for me? You give me your name, give me the request." And he would put them there and he kept them in a little 3x5 index card box. And he would look at them and he would pray over those things. And the next time he saw you, he would say, "Well, how's it going with this?" "Oh, that was great. My friend got out of the hospital. My friend did great." He'd write it down. And somebody said, "Well, why do you keep all that?" He said, "It's spiritual research." I stole that from Peter Marshall. I can learn from a lot of people of different stripes, but it's always about Christ first and foremost. And so there is a perspective that you and I have got to have. And so Jacob Duchesne, and I hope I'm pronouncing that man's name right. It's D-U-C-H-E with an apostrophe. If it's not Duchesne, it ought to be. He read a passage of scripture from Psalm 35. And you know what this guy was praying? He was basically praying for the wrath of God to fall on their head. These people that were trying to destroy the country that they were trying to build, he was praying for the wrath of God upon them. It's called an imprecatory prayer. And so we see that there was a presumption. But last thing I want you to see is I want you to see a preservation. A preservation. The hoary head, back in Proverbs 16, the hoary head is a crown of glory if it be found in the way of righteousness. In other words, if that man or that woman has lived a life that has been honoring to God, and there's wisdom there, there will be glory there. But then it gives an example in verse 32. "He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty. And he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh the city." Can you imagine in Philadelphia, as they had been meeting and they had been arguing and they had been screaming at each other about trying to form this nation out of those 13 original colonies? Then finally, somebody said, "Let's just call a time of prayer. Let's just pray." And so they ceased their arguing. They ceased their bickering back and forth. And they fell to their knees and they began to pray to Almighty God to forge this nation out of nothing, basically. And you know what God did? God answered that prayer. And the problems that we have today, if we want God to do it again, then we're going to have to do what they did. We're going to have to be a praying people. We're going to have to call upon God. We're not calling upon Allah. We're not calling to some other pagan deity. We're calling upon the God of the Bible if we're ever going to get out of this mess that we're in. But if you look, it's talking about the old people and how that if they are ruling their spirit, that they are going to be blessed. But notice when the glory comes, it does not come when they're young. The peers of Rehoboam, those that would be considered, you know, friends of his, those of his same, you know, age group. Those guys are not getting the glory. No, they were complicit in wrecking a nation because they talked their buddy, who just happened to be born into the right family, into putting more taxes. Why? So that they could party hardy. And yet, We read that he that is slow to anger. And when you do that long days, long months, years, one upon another, what you've got is you've got a preservation that you can count upon. If we're going to be preserved as a nation, it's going to be because we listen to somebody that's got some experience and somebody's got some sense. It's not that we're going to be listening to people that are basically imbeciles. Why do you think that our founders were so wise that you could not even run for president until you were 35? Because they knew that 21-year-olds were dumb as stumps. And yet we have people in the halls of Congress today, and they think that we ought to lower the voting age to 16. You could get a kid that was 16 to vote for anything you wanted if you just give him a Twinkie. Listen to the old people. They know what the score is. Most of the time, whenever I'm preaching along this line, I'm preaching to teenagers, listening to your parents. You know, it's amazing that your parents made it until you got here. No, the thing is, they have now got a life experience. They have lived for God. And if you've got any wisdom and discernment at all, you're going to listen to what they've got to say. Why? Because we're commanded to go to the old people if you want an answer. I'll give you an example, or maybe an illustration, of how we know that the glory comes at the end and not at the beginning. When does the judgment seat of Christ take place? It doesn't take place at the beginning of your Christian life. It takes place at the end of your Christian life. Hebrews 9:27. It is appointed unto man once to die, and after that, the judgment. The judgment seat is where the glory or the dishonor will be found out. You live your life biblically. You walk your walk biblically. You make sure that when you take your last breath, somebody walks by that coffin and they go, "That was a wise man right there. That man followed the Bible. That man lived his life by the book. He didn't let the world, he didn't let the flesh, he didn't let the devil come in. He followed the book." And if you live that way, then you can have glory. If you don't live that way, there will be no glory. You don't get to have glory just by marking time. You get glory by doing something with the time that God's given to you. That's where the glory comes in. But you don't get it at the beginning, you get it at the end. And so, if we want to survive, if we want to survive as a family, if we want to survive as a church, if we want to survive as a nation, we go to the old people and we find out how they succeeded in the past so that we can do the exact same thing in the future. And instead of listening to people that have never done anything in their life, but yet they've got all the answers, like most college kids that come out of Bible college. When I got out of Bible college, I could told you about anything you wanted to know. And now I'm in the ministry for 50 years and, you know, and I'm like, I don't really know if I know anything. But I know this. I know I believe this book. And I know I try to preach this book. And I know when I die, I hope somebody walks by and says, "He was a Bible guy." I think that if somebody stuck my finger, I'd like to think that I would bleed bibline. I hope I would bleed Bible. That's all I got to preach. Saw a guy the other day, had a little thing around his neck in the rainbow flag. We don't believe the Bible. We just preach Jesus. And he said, we preach the word. And I'm thinking, are you stupid? Jesus is the word. Is that not what John 1 teaches us? In the beginning was the word. Word was with God. The word was God. Jesus wants to be known as the word. That goes hand in hand. And so we're Bible people. When I need to know something, I go to the old people. For the first 8 years that I was a senior pastor here, not a week, sometimes multiple times during a week, not 1 week did I not go either over off of HD8th Road or later down to Monroe at Great Oaks. Say, preacher, I need to ask you something. Why is that? Because I was going to the old person, the one that had done it. Dr. Hodges used to say, if you want to know how to grow corn, you go find a man that's got some in his crib. And that's what I was doing. He's gone now. But there's people in this church that when I really have got to know what they think we ought to do, I go to them and I ask their opinion. Why is that? Because I have trust in them because of their track record. I don't go to somebody who's been saved 37 seconds. No, I go to somebody that's walked it. And when you need to know something, ask the old people.